Well, back in 1 Samuel tonight, beginning in chapter 29. Last week, as we finished up in chapter 28, you'll remember that Saul couldn't get God to answer him. What should I do? What should I do? What should I do? And God wouldn't answer. And there were no prophets, and Samuel was dead. So he went to the witch at Endor. And we talked about that and how it was that his advisors knew exactly where to find her. And, we could easily spend more time talking about that and how it was that witch had as much influence as she did, even though she was by law in hiding and trying to preserve her life. Yet when Saul decided that's what he needed for advice, then his advisors knew right exactly where to find her. And that turned into quite a moment of bad news for Samuel, as she, and it even was terrifying to her because witches don't really have the power to call up people from the dead. All they have is playing games with demons. And so when Samuel, God granted a, I don't know what you would call it, a variance, then it was terrifying to her as well because she did not expect that.
Is this
And
song?
pardon,
Song?
Samuel.
Mm-hmm.
She called up Samuel from the
Oh,
dead.
she called up Sam. Okay.
Yeah, and it was terrifying to her. And
That's
then,
right.
of course, Saul, I don't think that Saul saw Samuel, but she did. And when she related what he looked like, of course, Samuel appeared in the same robe that he had always worn so that he would be easily recognized, and she described it. And so Saul fell down and prostrated himself before Samuel. And Samuel said, "Why are you bothering me? God already told you how this ends." And Samuel told him that by this time tomorrow, you and your sons will be with me. And it doesn't mean with him in whatever we would call heaven or the presence of God. It just means with him in the grave. Saul would be dead by that time tomorrow. And so the witch decided that he looked pretty famished and pretty forlorn. So she offered to make him dinner, which she did. And of course, making dinner was a little more difficult. She had to go kill a cow and slice part of it off and roast it and make some cakes out of flour. And so it's a process. It doesn't just pop in the microwave and here's your scabetti, So it was probably in a couple of hours. And then he was rejuvenated, got up in the middle of the night and left and went away that night. And that's where we finished chapter 28 last week. So now chapter 29 and 30 and 31 each is a little different topic, but they all relate and come to the climax of the book of 1 Samuel in chapter 31. So chapter 31, we go back from where Saul was with the witch at Endor, and we go back to the story of David. And if you'll remember, David went back to after he spared Saul's life again. He figured, I am never going to be rid of this man. He will kill me if I stay. So he left Judah altogether, the promised land, and he went into Philistine country, and he went back to Achish, the king of Gath, where he had been a few chapters ago, and had to feign insanity in order to escape that town with his life under King Achish. And now he has gone back to the same man, to the same town, and remember, that's the town that Goliath is from. And so David has quite a reputation there, and he feigns allegiance to the king of Gath, Achish, saying that, I'm out of my territory and I'll be here. And so Achish accepted him and gave him the region of Ziklag, which was a little bit of ways, and he had the right to do that. So he gave that town to David and David's 600 followers, plus whatever they had in terms of family and livestock and things like that. So David had been in Ziklag. Now the Philistines had gathered all their forces at Aphek, and the Israelites were encamped by the spring that's in Jezreel. Aphek, the area where they are, is the same area they were 90 years ago when Eli was alive and the Philistines went to battle and captured the ark. Okay, so remember that story early on? So that's been about 90 years. And so now the Philistines, remember there was what we call a pentapolis, five cities that the Philistines, the five major cities, and each city with its region, with its own lord or king. And Achish, of course, is the king of Gath. So the Philistines gathered their forces at Aphek, and the Israelites were encamped by the spring that's in Jezreel. As the lords of the Philistines were passing on by hundreds and by thousands, and David and his men were passing on in the rear with Achish. So you had all five of the kings going like a parade with their forces, and Achish was the last one in line, and David was the last of his. And so then when the other lords saw this, they're not happy. And David and his men were passing on in the rear with Achish. The commanders of the Philistines said, "What are these Hebrews doing here?" And Achish said to the commanders of the Philistines, "Is this not David, the servant of Saul, king of Israel, who has been with me for days and years?" So, Cheryl, when you've been asking, time frame and stuff, this is one of the places where we try to determine, how long exactly from the time David killed Goliath till he became king. He became king at the age of 30. And most scholars agree that he was probably 14-ish, 15 when he killed Goliath. So he's been essentially on the run from Saul for 15 years, much like Joseph was in the beginning in his tour in Egypt. He was about 17 or 18 years before he was let out of prison, the time there. And so, is this not David, the servant of Saul, king of Israel, who has been with me now for days and years? And since he deserted to me, I have found no fault in him to this day. Of course, what he doesn't know is David hasn't been telling him the truth, because he's been going out raiding in Philistine territory against different people groups, and then he tells Achish he's been up raiding in the southern part of Judah. So he says, "I find no fault in him," but that's because David hasn't been honest with him. And David, we pointed out last week, was doing all that trouble in the Philistine territory to different people groups, different ethnicities, because he knows when he gets to be king, he's going to have to deal with those people anyway. Might as well do it now. And so the Achish is defending David serving with them in this battle that's coming up. "I've found no fault in him to this day." But the commanders of the Philistines were angry with him. And the commanders of the Philistines said to him, "Send the man back that he may return to the place to which you have assigned him, Ziklag. He shall not go down with us to battle, lest in battle he become an adversary to us. For how could this fellow reconcile himself to his Lord?" And so, this word "Lord" is the one that's usually spoken of when we refer to God, Adonai or Adoni. And
And it's not.
the commanders are either saying, "How could he possibly reconcile himself to his Lord Saul, or to his Lord, his own God?"
Right, because it's not capitalized or
They
anything.
never are. The Hebrew has no such thing as capital letters. Remember, translation is one part interpretation.
Just
And so,
assumed they meant a Lord.
well, yeah, but it just says "to his Lord." So the door is left open exactly what that person meant. And when the Bible isn't clear, neither should we be. So we just, there's no distinction in Hebrew letters between uppercase and lowercase. Brett?
Can you explain the word effects of the in this okay. Map, or is it possible to find it there?
It's right here on the map.
What about
Well,
Ziklag?
the Ziklag, do you see Aphek?
It's way up at the top, right
Well,
there.
I'll give you
Right?
no.
See right there. That's Aphek.
There's Gath
It's way
here.
up above
Usually miles south of Ziklag, but it's the Bible
This
says
north of Gath.
no, it's north of Gath.
It's not on the map. Yes, it
No,
is.
it's
It's
not.
well, it's on my map.
There's
No, we're talking about
Gibeah.
this map.
There's Gibeah. Yeah, there's a and she has a little map in her Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Right at the
top. Right there. Okay.
It's like
right
she, has a different map in her Bible.
Am I confused? Yeah.
Okay. Back to the text. Back to the text. Okay. We got a lot of ground to cover tonight. How could this fellow reconcile himself to his Lord? Would it not be with the heads of the men here? Is not this David of whom they sing to one another in dances? Saul has struck down his thousands and David to his 10,000s. So what they're implying is he's going to turn traitor on us.
Yeah.
The only way he can reconcile himself with his Lord is with our heads.
I'm just kind of surprised that they haven't heard about his raids through the grapevine. You know, I mean,
but
he killed everybody. So
remember in the last week of the chapter, that he slaughtered them all.
Everything.
Men, women, children.
And animals.
Took the animals.
No one was left to tell.
Well.
Yeah, really. Where'd it go?
So, you know, we have to be cultural conscious. For me, you know, I had a 7-minute project where with a water leak the other day. And so I get in my truck and I drive the 12 miles to the hardware store through the Dobies. 20 minutes, stop to see Rita and drop off a couple of books, go to the hardware store, spend 12 or 15 minutes there, get the part, drive 20 minutes back. Of course, it's the wrong size. So I get in the truck again and drive back again 20 minutes. This time I don't have to see Rita, but I'm not going to use the same guy I used last time because I got the wrong part. So I'm searching myself. I have to discuss with the lady at the counter. But so it takes 2.5 hours. But in the meantime, I've traveled 40, 45 miles, got different parts, fixed the washer, and it's a big relief. In this culture, that would be a year. Okay?
Yeah.
When I went to Vietnam and was in Vietnam that year teaching over New Year's, there were maybe 100 pastors that came. The farthest one came 40 miles. Now, you have to realize most everybody in Vietnam drives a 120cc motorbike. Mm-hmm. That's their family car. They can put 5 or 6 people on those. Really?
Yeah.
I'm serious. I'm not kidding you.
Yeah.
And the guy that came 45 miles, that was the longest trip he'd ever taken in his life. Most of them were at great pains to travel 7 miles, not even as far as I go to the grocery store. And they don't do that very often because, number one, it's an agrarian society. I passed people on the road that were in a wooden cart being pulled by an ox with wooden wheels in Vietnam, like 15 years.
Yeah.
Not hundreds. Not 1,500, 15 years. So when we think of these guys, the reason their cities are 5 miles apart is because that's a day's walk for them. And they don't do that very often because they're agriculture and livestock based. And so, you know, when you go into that town and kill everybody, word of it's not going to get out very fast.
Yeah.
If at all. I mean, eventually sometime it will, but you know, it's not like what we see today or we have today. It's just not. And I think it's very hard for us to understand that. You know, I think, you know, when I was in Leadville, you can't do a plumbing truck without, it's very seldom you do a plumbing job without 3 trips to the hardware store. Unless you just have a lot of junk at home that you can set with.
And you need a tool you don't have.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I was living in Leadville, it was like 1 mile. So that's a lot easier instead of 10 or 12 miles. But it's just a whole different culture for us than what we're used to. You know, you go back to the coming out west, you know, and everybody's on horseback and stuff like that. Same type of environment. Those cattle drives, you know, when they drove cattle from Texas to Montana, they're 6 months on that drive, 5 months.
Thank you.
Yeah. So could this fellow reconcile to his Lord? Would it not be with the heads of the men here? and they identify him as, you know, the sing the song. Then Achish called David and said to him, "As the Lord lives." Now, isn't it interesting? That word Lord is in uppercase in your English Bible, which means that there he's Achish is using the name of David's God. I think Achish is deferring some honor and respect to David because he says, "I know you worship a different God than we do. And I remember the story about 90 years ago when we captured your ark and how well that went for us." You know, and so as your God lives, as the Lord lives, you have been honest. And to me, it seems right that you should march out and in with me in the campaign. And I think about that, I mean, how many battles have we seen David go through in the last 14, 15? That's all they do. They pack on their swords and they go out to kill people. That's all they do. And we're talking in Gaza. That's where they are. And
that's all they do now.
Yeah, exactly. Cheryl.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, if the lords of the Philistines came and said, "We don't want that guy," I'm thinking, "Hallelujah, man, I'm out of here. I'm getting tired of packing this sword out there and having people try to kill me all day, every day." Gee, many.
Plus Saul's trying to kill him.
Plus Saul, too. Yeah, exactly. He said, and he says, "It seems right that you," and so it's a thing of honor. You know, Achish is feeling bad because he has to fire David on this campaign, and he wants to encourage David. It's not because of you, and it's not because I doubt you. I'm with you, man. I really like you. I trust you, blah, blah, blah. And he says, "For I have found nothing wrong in you from the day of your coming to me to this day. Nevertheless, the Lords do not approve of you. So go back now and go peaceably." In other words, don't be angry at them and go cause a big stink just because they don't like you. I like you, but please go back peaceably that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines. David said to Achish. Now, David is probably extremely relieved that they're doing this because he doesn't want to go fight the Jews. He doesn't want to fight Saul and Saul's troop. So he's probably, I mean, think of the position he was in. He's probably wondering the same thing. Which team am I going to fight for? Am I going to try to kill Saul and Jonathan? Or am I going to turn on the Philistines?
His
rue? I would think you're right. I think you're right about that.
He said, "Oh, please, yes, come on, I'm going to go with you."
Yeah. And in the back of his mind, he's thinking, "Thank God." Yeah, I think you're right, Carrie. Part of his rue. Yep. And David said to Achish, but what have I done? What have you found in your servant from the day I entered your service till now that I may not go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king?" And Achish answered David and said, "I know that you're as blameless in my sight as an angel of God." I think those guys are both buttering both sides of the toast, aren't they?
Yep.
And you know, it's, I was watching it. I can't remember what it was the other day, but I was watching the video, and it's just a pathetic thing when you get about six or eight guys together, and one of them might have had a beer or two of them, and all it is it's a testosterone show. You know, they just have to go out there and bump bellies with each other. And of course, they have beer bellies. Or, you know, slap each other in the back of the head. And that's exactly what's going on here. You know, they don't have enough cattle to keep them busy all the time. So let's just go to war. Let's go kill somebody. Kind of like, you know, kind of like we do with, I got an afternoon off. Let's go shoot some prairie dogs. Type of thing. So he shall not go up with us. The lords of the Philistines have said he shall not go up with us to the battle. Now then rise early in the morning with the servants of your Lord who came with you and start early in the morning and depart as soon as you have light. So David set out with his men early in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines. But the Philistines went up to Jezreel. Now, Fred, one of the commentaries I have say that march from where they were camped at that time back to Ziklag would be approximately 75 miles.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So they made it in about 3 days, and that's pretty good time considering all the gear that they had to carry and things like that.
So I'm watching the movie, David, and I know movies are rude. So in the movie, Joab is with David this whole time, but they never mentioned, was Joab really with him?
I don't know that he was at this time. I don't remember.
Okay. And then also I had a question. So David's lying. So how is that
Yeah.
okay in God's sight?
Yeah.
Because he's lying, he's not being
Yeah,
truthful. So
let's
I
be
was just
careful how
wondering.
we define okay. Because the same question would apply to Rahab in Jericho, Rahab the harlot. When the king of Jericho came, where's them guys that came spy us out? I don't know. They were here for a little while and then they ran away. But she knew she was hiding them on her roof. So the same thing that, Carrie Ten Boom and her sister got in a fight that pretty much severed their relationship. Carrie's sister says, I'm not lying. If those cops come in here and say, where are the Jews? I'm not lying. God says, don't lie. I'm gonna open the door and show them. And Carrie said, no, you won't. And so who's right? We live in a fallen world. David's trying to preserve himself and the 600 men that are with him, and he's put in a really, really difficult situation. And so, in order to maintain peace and harmony, he can't be 100% honest in this. And if he is 100% honest, it's not going to go well. So the art of politics is compromise. That's what politics is. Anybody that's a, this is why Chip Roy is such a thorn in Donald Trump's side and everybody else that wants to get the big, beautiful bill passed. Because Chip says, you said you were going to slash $10 trillion and you're only at 9.8. I'm not voting for this stinking bill. Okay. That type of thing. So Chip Roy is a diehard. And you respect him for that, for his constituents. But if the bill doesn't pass, and Trump can't do anything for the next 2 years, and then the Democrats get the House and the Senate, we're down the toilet. Okay? So politics is the art of compromise, and this is exactly what's going on here. It's just the art of compromise.
Well, and as you said, he knows he's going to have to deal with Philistines eventually
Yeah,
anyway.
right.
So this could be part of his way of working to be able to deal with them too.
Yeah.
So.
And also in our own lives, we do that at times. We know what we're doing really isn't what God wants us to do, but we're kind of like put in a position where if we do, run whatever. And whenever I'm in that position, I run to God immediately. And my heart, God, I don't really want to do this way.
And
And
we see,
especially when the other side doesn't
we
see
even
it.
see in the council of God when the angels are gathered, and God, we saw this a while back. I think it was here, or maybe it was just in my daily reading. When God, oh no, it's when God is going to bring down one of the kings. So it'd be in the book of Kings, not Samuel. And he says, who will go entice this king to fight in the battle? And the angels are given different ideas, and finally one comes and says, I'll do it. And God says, how? And he says, I'll go be a lying spirit in the mouth of his prophets. And God says, that sounds like it'll work. So he actually sends an angel, a good angel, to go become a lying spirit in the prophets before the king and cause that king to go to battle, because God has in mind that the king is going to die in that battle. And that's the working out of God's will. And we can't say that God caused the angel to lie. But there's everything got more complex when sin was introduced into the world. Much more complex than it needed to be. So that's the end of chapter 29. Now, when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day. Okay. And like I said, the one commentary I have, let me get up here to where it is. On the third day indicates that David and his men covered about 25 miles a day on the march south from Aphek to Ziklag. So Fred, Aphek is 75 miles north of Ziklag on there.
It's about 50%.
And you said that's about where it was on your little map, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And of course, they're arriving tired, hungry, dirty from the dust on the trail, all that kind of stuff. And when they come into Ziklag, the Amalekites had made a raid against the Negev. The Negev is just the word for the southern region, and against Ziklag. They had overcome Ziklag. Of course, the Philistines are all going to go fight the Jews. And so the Amalekites think, great, let's go sack the cities. I mean, it's just those six guys with beer bellies bashing each other again. It's all it is. Shimini. So glad we're born in 20th century America.
Yeah, it's a lot better.
Let's go make a raid against the Negev and against Ziklag. They had overcome Ziklag and burned it with fire and taken captive the women and all who were in it, both small and great. Uh-oh. They killed no one but carried them off and went their way. They killed no one because they had different purpose than David. David killed everybody because he didn't want anybody to know he was killing everybody. They kept everybody alive because they sell them as slaves, just like Joseph's brothers sold him. They pretended they killed him so they could tell Jacob, "Is this your son's coat? We found it covered in blood. I guess a lion got him." But really, what they did was they sold him into slavery. So this is what they intend. The Amalekites come, they sack Ziklag, burn it all down, and take all the people captive because they're going to take them somewhere and sell them or make slaves out of them themselves, either way. So, and when David and his men came to the city, they found it burned with fire and their wives and sons and daughters taken captive. Now, David has 600 men with him. Not all of them are, J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio. Some of them are scalawags. And they're men of war. And the reason they're not even living in Judah, but have to retreat to the southern part in this cursed place, Ziklag, is because David can't get along with Saul. He can't get along with the Philistines. He can't get along with anybody except these 600 scalawags. And so they're tired. They're hungry. They get home, the wife and kids are gone, as well as the livestock, and their house is burned. So then David and the people who were with him raised their voices and wept until they had no more strength to weep. Have you ever watched funerals in that culture?
Oh my
Or
goodness.
a hardline Catholic funeral?
I saw the weeping on this movie, and they're like throwing dirt in their face.
Yes.
I'm just like, they're like covering themselves in dirt, and oh my goodness, I'm like,
Yes. It's bizarre, isn't
thank you. I was gonna say that, but I was like, being respectful, I was like,
No, it's really
it's
bizarre.
very bizarre. Very
Oriental,
bizarre. I was
when
like,
the Oriental culture has funerals, it's really very bizarre and a lot of loud, loud weeping. It's almost like a contest, who can throw the most dust and weep the loudest until they had no more strength to weep. David's two wives also had been taken captive, Ahinoam in Jezreel, and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. And David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him. His wives are gone too, guys. His house is burned also. And they're going to stone David. I mean, good grief. But here's the difference right here between David and Saul. Because all the people were bitter in soul for each of his sons and daughters. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. You never saw Saul do that. David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. When things were as bad as they could possibly be, his men were going to stone him, his wives were gone, his house is burned. He's just walked 75 miles carrying a 40-pound backpack. In the midst of that great depression and discouragement, he runs to a private place and strengthens himself in the Lord his God. Isn't that amazing? That is amazing. Psalm 25, verse 16 and 17. Turn to me and be gracious to me, for I am lonely and afflicted. The troubles of my heart are enlarged. Bring me out of my distresses. That's a psalm that David wrote. Did he write it in connection with this? We don't know. Is it appropriate for this? Absolutely. Psalm 25, verses 16 and 17. So when it says that David strengthened himself in the Lord, this is what it's talking about. And David said to Abiathar the priest, son of Ahimelech, bring me the ephod. Remember, the ephod is the garment of the high priest that Saul killed and his son took it and ran away. So Abiathar brought the ephod to David, and David inquired of the Lord, shall I pursue after this band? Shall I overtake them? And he answered, pursue, for you shall surely overtake and shall surely rescue. Now the ephod only gave yes or no answers, but this is the interpretation David understands with the help of Abiathar. So David set out, and the 600 men who were with him, and they came to the brook Besor, where those who were left behind stayed. But David pursued, and he and 400 men, 200 stayed behind, who were too exhausted to cross the brook. So they took out, I thought it said in here, they took out in the at twilight, but it was actually probably in the morning, because that word can be used either way. And so they get to a brook, and 200 of the 600 are just exhausted. And they say, we can't go anymore. We're going to stay here. Of course, that invites the rest of them to leave some stuff and to lighten the load. And so 400 go on with David. They found an Egyptian in the open country and brought him to David. And of course, there's no GPS tracking. How do they know where the Amalekites went? They have no idea. They're just running out there pursuing. There's no Cherokees to help them with tracking or anything like that. They found an Egyptian in the open country and brought him to David, and they gave him bread and he ate. They gave him water to drink, and they gave him a piece of cake of figs and two clusters of raisins. And when he had eaten, his spirit revived, for he had not eaten bread or drunk water for 3 days and 3 nights.
Is there a significance to that?
Pardon?
Is there a significance to 3 days and three nights?
Well,
About
I mean,
the
there's a biblical pattern, but I don't know that it's significant in terms of a metaphor or a type.
Well, that's the timing.
Right.
It took David 3 days to get him down to Ziklag.
Three
This guy said he hasn't eaten in
days and three
any.
nights.
So, quite
So the
possibly.
Amalekites were kind of spying. They knew the Philistines were going to go to war. So as soon as David left, they hit the town. Yeah.
And I think God maneuvered all of
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
that.
Yeah. And David said to him, to whom do you belong and where are you from? And he said, I'm a young man of Egypt, servant to an Amalekite, and my master left me behind because I fell sick 3 days ago. We made a raid against the Negeb of the Kerethites and against that which belongs to Judah and against the Negeb. The Kerethites are just another people group that lives in that area. And sometimes they're at war and sometimes they're not. And against that which belongs to Judah and against the Negeb of Caleb, the Negeb of Caleb, this is Caleb of Joshua and Caleb, the mountain that Caleb settled for his own family. And so that region is still known as his, even though it's 500 years later. And they know that region belongs to Caleb and his family. And we burned Ziklag with fire also. And David said to him, will you take me down to this band? And he said, swear to me by God that you'll not kill me or deliver me into the hands of my master, and I'll take you down to this band. I mean, he really doesn't have much arguing, Okay, well, if you don't take me, I'm going to kill you. So, and I'm going to go find him anyway. And so if you don't tell me, I'm going to take you and give you back to him. So I know he doesn't have much to deal with, but he tries.
And David didn't answer him.
So they start off, and when he had taken him down, behold, they were spread abroad all over the land, eating and drinking and dancing because of the great spoil that had taken from the land of the Philistines and from the land of Judah. So they had raided several places, quite a few. And so they have all of the livestock, all of the women and children, and all of the stuff they take, the all of the food and drink that they stole from the preppers up in that area. And so they're down there, they're just partying up. So David struck them down. Oh, there it is, from twilight until the evening of the next day. Now, I'm interpreting that twilight to be early in the morning as the sun is coming up, because they just finished their 75 mile march. They just finished another march to get to these guys, catch up the 3 days that they've been traveling, and they're exhausted. They don't want to go in there and start the fight that night. Let these guys finish their drinking, sleep in the morning, and be hungover, and get an early start on them. So David struck them down from twilight, or we should say from dawn, until the evening of the next day, and not a man of them escaped. Evening was any time after the sun reached its zenith and began going down. So in the Hebrew idiom of the Hebrew picture of evening is as the sun is going down, and it could be any time after it's the zenith at noon. So into the late afternoon, probably. They fought from the sun come up till into the late afternoon. And he struck them down, and not a man of them escaped, except 400 young men who mounted camels and fled. So these were probably some of the young Amalekites that were just in charge of keeping the livestock and things like that. And keep in mind, David has 400 men. And if it says nobody escaped except 400 young men, that means there was a big group of people, the Amalekites, a lot of warriors or scalawags. Who knows how good of warriors they were, but they were successful in their raids. And David recovered all that the Amalekites had taken, and David rescued his two wives. Nothing was missing, whether small or great, sons or daughters, spoil, or anything that had been taken. David brought back all. He also captured all the flocks and herds, and the people drove the livestock before him and said, "This is David's spoil." So now they've gone in the space of a few days, "We're going to kill you, stone you to death." And now, yeah, they say that this is David's spoil. And again, as Fred pointed out, this is nothing but the hand of God in here, because we're going to see in a few minutes why it's so critically important that when the Amalekites went through there, they took everything but kept it in good shape, all the livestock, all the people, everything. And they also got back all the food that they can deliver back to the preppers and whatever else. So when David came to the 200 men who had been exhausted to follow David and who had been left at the brook Besor, they went out to meet David and to meet the people who were with him. When David came near to the people and greeted them, then all the people, all the wicked and worthless fellows among the men who had gone with David, wicked and worthless fellows, they said, "Because they didn't go with us, we'll not give them any of the spoil that we've recovered, except that each man may lead away his wife and children and depart." But David said, "You shall not do so, my brothers, with what the Lord has given us." So, that's a principle that David looked at. This is not mine. This is not yours. This is what the Lord has restored to us. And so we'll restore to each person what is theirs. Because David said, "If the Lord treats me this way, this is the way I'm going to treat other people." And that's a good principle to follow. You shall not do this with what the Lord has given us. He has preserved us and given into our hand the band that came against us. Who would listen to you in this matter? For as his share is who goes down into battle, so shall his share be who stays by the baggage. They all share alike. And he made it a statute and a rule for Israel from that day forward to this. And that was a stroke of genius wisdom there. Another peacemaker, because that would have caused a war between the 200 and the 400. When David came to Ziklag, he sent part of the spoil to his friends, the elders of Judah, saying, "Here is a present for you from the spoil of the enemies of the Lord." And these friends of his in Judah are also some of the cities that the Amalekites had sacked and taken. And so those cities didn't send out warriors to get their stuff back, but David did. And now he's returning that stuff plus some to other cities that may not have been involved. And what he is doing in that, consciously or unconsciously, he is securing the right and the principle to be king of those people. Here is a present for you from the spoil of the enemies of the Lord. So, not, in other words, he's saying they're not my enemies, not your enemies, they're enemies of the Lord. And by saying that, he's saying, we have the same God, we're brothers. Okay. What's mine is yours, and what's yours is, the Lord gave it to us. So this is what we're passing on. It was for those in Bethel, in Ramoth. Now look on your little map where Bethel and Ramoth are from Ziklag. Probably not Bethel that years later, centuries later, would be established in the Northern Kingdom, but Bethel, or you'll see Ramah up there way to the north. And that was the hometown of Samuel, remember? In Ramoth of the Negeb, in Jetur, in Aroer, in Siphmoth, in Eshtemoa, in Rakel, the cities of the Jerahmeelites, the cities of the Kenites, in Hormah, Bershan, Attak, in Hebron, for all the places where David and his men had roamed. So all of the places where David had been running from Saul, there was enough bounty that he sent out to those places. This is what the Lord has given us. We're going to share it with you. Now, in the meantime, while David is doing this, chapter 31, the Philistines were fighting against Israel, and the men of Israel fled before the Philistines and fell slain on Mount Gilboa. I think Gilboa is on your map there.
What does that mean? Which who fell slain? The Philistines
No.
or the Israelites?
Look at the antecedents there. Look at the grammar. Now, the Philistines were fighting against Israel, and the men of Israel fled before the Philistines and fell slain on the mountain.
So they were dead on
the Israelites.
Israelites fell slain.
Saul and his
Yeah.
family.
The Israelites.
Wow.
The Israelites are the ones that are fleeing, so they're the ones that are going to fall slain. The Philistines are winning. And the Philistines overtook Saul and his sons, and the Philistines struck down Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, the sons of Saul. There's one that survived, but he wasn't in the battle.
And that's exactly what Samuel had said was going to happen.
Yep. This day, by this time tomorrow, you and your brother, sons or whatever, brothers, sons will be with me. The battle pressed hard against Saul, and the archers found him, and he was badly wounded by the archers. So you want to remember, Samuel told, just because, these three chapters are three different subjects. Samuel told Saul, by this time tomorrow, you and your sons will be with me. So one day has elapsed for Saul. But David walked 3 days back to where he lived and then pursued the Amalekites and then back. So Saul is literally fighting the Philistines while David is going chasing the Amalekites and stuff, because that took him approximately a week, probably close to 6 days, and at least 4 or 5 days. But during those 4 or 5 days is when Saul is at war with the Philistines in chapter 31. Battle pressed hard against Saul, and the archers found him, and he was badly wounded by the archers. Then Saul said to his armor bearer, "Draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and mistreat me." Do you remember what they did with Samson? The Philistines, when they captured Samson, pulled his eyes out and tied him to a mill and made him grind meal like an oxen and torture him and torment him and persecute him and things like. Saul says, that's not my. Saul is like 70 years old. I don't need that when I'm 70 years old. So he tells his armor bearer, just kill me. And the armor bearer, like David, says, I'm not going to kill the Lord's anointed. And so Saul, wounded, took his own sword and fell upon it. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he also fell upon his sword and died with him. Thus Saul died, and his three sons, and his armor bearer, and all his men on the same day together. And when the men of Israel who were with the who were on the other side of the valley and those beyond the Jordan saw that the men of Israel, so they're down in the valley where they're fighting, and the people that live on the hills neighboring that can look down on that. Have you seen been to areas where they fought the Civil War and seen movies like Gods and Generals, where the highfalutin women and their husbands would come out of the town and bring a picnic lunch and watch the battle there 200 yards away, watch different people being killed and things like that.
That is true.
I mean, it's really a weird, bizarre situation when, you know, but this is what's happening. When the men of Israel who were on the other side of the valley and those beyond the Jordan saw that the men of Israel had fled and that Saul and his sons were dead, they abandoned their cities and fled, and the Philistines came and lived in them. And so now the Israelites are living in caves and running for their lives to who knows where. But the Philistines come and take the cities and establish them, put people in them, and the Jews are all running away. The next day, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, so, you know, they run to some of those cities and spend the night there and have a dinner and celebrate and wine and things like that. Then the next day they say, okay, let's go get the loot. And they turn the bodies over and pick the pockets and take the rings off, and like the Nazis did with the Jews, you know, chip the gold teeth out. And when Babylon was taken by, or not Babylon, when Jerusalem was taken by Babylon, many of the Jews were taking their gold and swallowing it and fleeing into the hills. And the Babylonians would capture them and just slice their gut open and look for the gold that they'd been swallowing, you know? So, I mean, how far do you want to take your imagination? When the Philistines came to strip the slain, they found Saul and his three sons fallen on Mount Gilboa. So they cut off his head. Remember, that's what David did to Goliath. They cut off his head and stripped off his armor and sent messengers throughout the land of the Philistines to carry the, quote, good news to the house of their idols and the people. They put his armor in the temple of Ashtaroth, and they fastened his body to the wall of Beth Shean. And they would send his head around, and then it would finally end up in the temple of Dagon, their god. You know, kind of a victory lap. That's sick. See, this is why my granddaughter was fired from the Awanas Club in Leadville. Because she went to Awanas one night, and the leader of Awanas was saying, the whole Bible is God's love story to you. And she thought about that. She said,
It's a bloodbath.
And he said, what? She said, haven't you read it? It's a bloodbath from start to end. So he didn't let her participate for at least that evening, or maybe several weeks. I don't know. But, you know, she knew better. Yes, it is a love story. But yes, it is a bloodbath. But this is no different than exactly what's going on. Just think October 7th, year and a half ago. It's the same exact people groups. It's the same exact behavior. It's just that they have different weapons now, but they do the same things. And the cartels in Mexico, they're this wicked plus.
Oh, yeah, they'll line fence posts with heads and stuff.
Yes. Hang them from bridges and... Yep, Fred.
You know, to get back to what was developing with David's relationship with Israel, because he was going to become king not only in name but also in notoriety.
Yes,
he was not involved in this skirmish with Saul.
Right,
God had set that up, maneuvered things, and David was not involved in that. And not only that, but he still had a pretty good relationship with the Philistines, because he was not involved in this.
Yeah.
And he didn't turn coup. He didn't even get involved. So basically, he still had somewhat of a relationship with the Philistines, not on the bad side, but he was out of this thing all the way.
It'd be easier for him to have some peace in the kingdom. Easier, I'm not saying.
Well, it also made him not party So his people would not think that he took Saul out. He actually went up there,
Right.
shooting arrows at this guy.
Yep.
He wasn't there. He was not involved.
We got 3 minutes.
Okay.
But when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard what the Philistines had, now we could go back a couple of chapters and look at the history of Jabesh-Gilead, but Saul had been a good deliverer for those people. So when they heard about what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and went all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshan. And they came to Jabesh and burned them there just to hide the mutilation and stuff, the dishonor that the Philistines had done from the body. Because ordinarily in the Jewish culture, you don't cremate, you don't burn. But they were so mutilated and disfigured, and now it's been several days and they're kind of stinky, you know, the way bodies do. So they came and burned them there, and they took their bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree in Jabesh and fasted 7 days out of honor to Saul. They didn't get his head back, but they got the bodies of Saul and his sons and came back and gave them a decent burial, if you could call it that. And that's the end of Saul and the beginning of the kingdom of David. So. Well, what a story, huh?
That was really good. I enjoyed that.
David's approaching 30 years old, close to by now. 30. Okay. I mean,
Yeah.
what was your life between the years of 15 and 30?
Yeah. Bad.
Easy. Exactly.
It's interesting. David wanted to build the temple, and God said, no, you've shed too much blood.
You're a man of
So,
bloodshed. I'm gonna let your son do it.
yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna name him the peaceful
Yeah.
one, Solomon. Let's pray. Our Father God in heaven, how we thank you for this day and thank you for your word and thank you for the history that it relates to us about those times and that culture and those people and how we see today, Father, that in much of the same ways, the same thing is going on over there still. We have a picture of those who are under the dogma of Mohammedism still fighting against the Jews. And we ask, Lord, that you would help us to live our lives with wisdom and every day, Father, be grateful for the times we live in and for the nation we live in. And help us, Father, to, in however you call us in prayer and campaigning to fight for the peace of Jerusalem and the peace of America. We think we see the same kind of thing happening between Russia and Ukraine and India and Pakistan. We're very close. And I pray, Father, that you would help President Trump and Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, to spread peace throughout the world and be able to end these conflicts with so much bloodshed and chaos and destruction of life and property. Thank you for your word. Please help us, Father, to fashion our life after you in a way that honors you and your name. In Jesus' name, amen.
You know, some